Mind now and think through me. Take my heart and love through me. Take my lips and speak through me your words to teach and touch our hearts, that we may glorify you in our lives, for Jesus Christ's sake. Amen. Very good morning to you all. Our gospel reading this morning introduces a new topic. In fact, it would have been much better as a chapter break to begin a new chapter than merely being verse 10. So there's no context whatever. It just begins, on a Sabbath, Jesus. We can conclude from those four words that Jesus made a point of attending synagogue on the Sabbath. And indeed, in Luke chapter 4, he tells us it was his custom. Our gospel reading falls into two parts. The first is the healing of the crippled woman. The second part is the controversy about the right use of the Sabbath, or Jesus' right use of the Sabbath. So let's look at them in that order. The healing of the crippled woman. Luke doesn't... Luke doesn't mince his words at all. A woman was there in the synagogue who'd been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and couldn't straighten up at all. What a perfectly horrible condition. Constantly bent, so you're looking at the ground. So she would have said good morning to a row of feet when she came into the synagogue that morning. That she could not straighten up suggests that the vertebrae of her spine were now fused into a solid mass. So it was actually impossible to straighten up. In my first curacy, we had a lady called Connie, and she was also L-shaped like that. And she had this massive wheelchair with the wheels well out in front, and I had to push her to church quite often. I became a dab hand at wheeling wheelchairs. Luke doesn't tell us precisely how this woman had become bent. We do know from our own experience and knowledge that it can be the result of some severe shock, such as a severe grief or bereavement or desertion. But Luke does tell us that she'd been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. So this spirit was an evil, demonic spirit. It had used and worked with whatever had happened to her, grief or desertion or whatever, to imprison her in this bent shape. But note, she was still able to come to synagogue, and she did. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." There's no indication at all that she'd come for healing, or even that she knew that Jesus would be there. So Jesus took the initiative. Of course, she could have refused to budge. She could simply have stayed where she was. But she didn't refuse. She did come forward. And Jesus told her that she had been set free, free to stand up straight, free to look the world in the eye, free to notice other people's needs. Then he put his hand on her. Now that's not something which Jesus normally did when performing an exorcism. So perhaps the demonic spirit had already left, already gone, and Jesus simply completed the healing. And all her fused vertebrae became unfused and were working together again. And immediately, we're told, she straightened up and she praised God. Interesting that she praised God and didn't praise Jesus. seems to confirm that she'd come to synagogue to worship God and not to be healed. Did you notice that Jesus twice used the phrase set free? To the woman, you are set free from your infirmity. And to the ruler, you should not, should not this woman, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 years, be set free on the Sabbath from what bound her? This is prison speak. This is prison language. This poor woman had been imprisoned by Satan in this miserable infirmity for 18 years. She was a prisoner without any hope or prospect of release, without any hope or prospect of escape. At the beginning of his ministry, Jesus had announced in the Nazareth synagogue that he would set prisoners free. He'd read from Isaiah the prophet, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and to release the oppressed." And that's exactly what he'd just done. Jesus, as God in human form, was and is infinitely more powerful than Satan. But at the end of his earthly ministry, he placed himself in Satan's hands and was crucified. By doing that, he won the crucial battle over Satan, and he won it for us. We share in the fruits of his victory. Which brings us to the second part of our gospel reading this morning, controversy over the right use of the Sabbath. Indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue ruler said to the people, "There are 6 days to work, so come and be healed on those days and not on the Sabbath." Several points here. First, he rebuked Jesus indirectly by speaking to the people, the congregation. Secondly, he quoted from the fourth commandment, keep the Sabbath holy. So he's very much a rule follower. In fact, as we've already seen, the woman hadn't come to be healed, but she'd come to worship God. So her healing was indeed Jesus' initiative, not hers. And then thirdly, did the ruler of the synagogue feel that Jesus had upstaged him in his responsibility for all that had happened, in the synagogue? Jesus had acted without first referring to him. Well, Jesus' response was simple. "You hypocrites!" A severe rebuke, a very severe rebuke to a Jew. And note, it's in the plural, hypocrites. So presumably Jesus included the synagogue elders who were standing there nodding as the synagogue ruler had spoken and agreeing with him. Now Jesus could have argued that no medicine had been involved and therefore there was no grinding of anything to make the medicine, which would have been forbidden on the Sabbath. And therefore the Sabbath had not been violated. But he didn't use that argument at all. Instead, he pointed to the Jewish care for animals on the Sabbath. Which of you doesn't take his ox or his donkey out to be watered? The rabbis were very keen that animals should be cared for on the Sabbath and not be neglected. And the rules were basically this: an animal may be led out from the stall on the Sabbath day, providing it wasn't carrying anything and the person who led it wasn't carrying anything. Water may be drawn and poured into a trough for the animal to drink, but you couldn't pour water into a pail and hold it for the animal to drink from. Well, said Jesus, if you do that for animals on the Sabbath, then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, a Jewess, as Jewish as you and I, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 years, be set free on the Sabbath from what bound her? There's really no answer to that, nor did they try to give him one. They were humiliated, but the people were delighted, not just with this miracle, but with all the things that he was doing. Now, this should make us wonder how we as Christians use our Sunday, which is our Sabbath. The fourth commandment commands us to remember the Sabbath day, and it applies as much to us as it did to the Israelites of 2,000, 3,000 years ago. The fourth commandment commands us to remember the Sabbath. It commands us to keep it holy. Indeed, we call it the Lord's Day. The Lord was resurrected on the first day of the week. And this is the day when we should come together, as long as we're able, to express our love for God in worship, just as Jesus did on the Sabbath, as was his custom. And the fourth commandment also commands us to rest, to recharge from what we do on the other 6 days of the week, just as God had rested after the 6 days of creation. So, unless your employer requires you to work on Sunday, it's good to do something quite different. After all, Jesus had said, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." That's in Mark chapter 2. If you're ever in doubt as to whether you should be doing what you are doing on the Sabbath day, ask yourself, what would Jesus have done? Amen.